I feel too stupid for this conversation all of a sudden.
No!
What's up, Yap Squad, and welcome back to Yap Sesh Podcast. I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Brooke.
And we are your lovely hosts. We've got some pretty cool updates for you. Brooke, what you got for me?
Updates? What do you mean, updates? We don't have anything cool. We don't have really anything cool to share.
Nothing? Nothing at all?
Well, I did, you know, I got the most interesting DM the other day.
Oh, okay.
From, you'll never guess. You'll never guess. We both got a DM from Star Wars, like the Star Wars. Swagman. If you're familiar with the Star Wars account on X, formerly Twitter and TikTok, because apparently we like Star Wars and they saw that we like Star Wars and they're gonna send us something for the Acolyte, which comes out at this point when this episode releases, it will have already released, I think. The first couple episodes.
I think so. The first episode, first two episodes at least. Yeah. Where were you when you got that DM?
I was in my car on my way home. I had stopped to get gas after work. And so I was just like in the middle of this gas station, and it was a gas station that I wasn't familiar with because I had like my gas light had turned on my way home, and I was like, shoot, I have to go get gas because, you know, I could make it home, but I don't want to take any chances. And so I was just in this random gas station, and I just like looked at my phone while my tank was being filled, and I was like, oh, is that Star Wars? That's crazy. Where were you?
I was having a little bit of a tantrum walk. I was having a really bad day, and you texted me and you were like, oh my God, I got this message. And I was just like, what? And I was in a thrift store, like trying to calm myself down. I took a walk from work because I was just having a bad day. And then I was like in the dressing room and I go to TikTok and they've messaged me. And it was like such a whiplash from the bad energy I was feeling to this, oh my God, Star Wars just DM'd me and is going to send me something that I almost threw up. I had never had that like so quick of a switch before. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then we also found out that a lot of our friends got the same message, which is really exciting.
Yes.
It's always great to see our besties being acknowledged for their passion. So
yeah. So we'll keep everyone updated when we get our packages and we'll see what they sent. And I'm super excited.
Yes, absolutely. Also, in terms of the Acolyte, if you didn't already know, I am hosting watch parties every new episode release as they come out, which I believe is 9 p.m. Eastern, which is really great. We don't have to wait till 3 a.m. We will also be posting reviews for the Acolyte every two episodes. We will be posting those on Tuesdays to serve as recaps for you guys.
Yeah.
Or Mondays. Mondays,
I think. Monday before the next new episode. So every two episodes, we're going to be doing a little bonus content. And speaking of bonus content, we have a Patreon.
We do have a Patreon.
And it's going to be awesome. And you're going to be able to get some cool perks if you join. We will be uploading our episodes a day early on there. And they will also be 99% unedited unless we say something so out of pocket we have to cut it out.
That never happens.
Or if we're how do you, okay, what would we say? I wanted to say like talk shit, but I feel like yap shit, like, you know, you make it yaps anyway. That's just thinking out loud there. So we'll have early episodes, unedited episodes, and we'd love to hear from y'all if you want anything cool that we can, any extra bonus content we can put in our Patreon. Let us know what you want to see. But I think we've got a really awesome guest and we've got a really cool conversation ahead of us. So I think it's time to jump right into that.
Let's do it.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Welcome to Yap Sesh.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little about who you are, what you do, why you're here?
So my name's Katrina. I go by Oh Katrina everywhere on the internet. I am a writer, producer, performer. I am also a podcaster. I host co-host podcast Pedro Pascal, the podcast about Pedro Pascal. I also host What's Glup and In the Cantina. I've been a contributor to the official Star Wars blog. I have consulted on a couple Star Wars books, and I'm on the podcast because I was very excited about the launch and then very excited when you asked me to be here. And I'm really excited to talk about our topic, which I think we'll get to in a second. But yeah, I'm so happy for how successful this has been. It's always good to see, you know, I've been in this fandom my whole life. And so when I see new podcasters show up and like they're just so passionate about Star Wars and this whole fandom, it just like brings like butterflies to my heart. So it's so nice to see that this podcast is kicking butt, and congrats on the new Patreon.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
We're having a lot of fun. And we're so glad that you could join us tonight. We always ask our guest to bring in a topic of their choice. And so we will be talking about world building in Star Wars specifically. But we wanted to, I guess, ask a little bit more about your experience with fandom, just in general, growing up and how it is now. Because we're fangirls in this house. I would love to know, what was your first fandom, if it was Star Wars, if it was something else, and do you have a favorite fandom, if that be Star Wars or something else?
I will say that my first fandom was Star Wars. I became a Star Wars fan because my dad was a Star Trek fan. there were a lot of Star Trek conventions in our area growing up, and so he would usually go on his own, but one week I think my mom was like out of town or something, and so he brought me along, dressed me up as a little TNG captain, and I went to the convention with him. And keep in mind, I'm a little older. It was the 90s, and so I was walking around the dealer's room by myself. I think I was like 6, and I found like a card dealer and like a pack of top Star Wars cards, and it had Han and Chewbacca on it in like their classic buddy pose, where like Han has his blaster out and Chewie's got the bowcaster, and then you know, I had like I think $10 that I was allowed to spend, so I got them, and then I like brought them to my dad and I'm like, which Star Trek characters are these? And I think that was his moment where he was like, yeah, it's time, let's go, let's introduce her to Star Wars. And so we went home, we watched A New Hope, and it's been like it was my first fandom, because it was the first like forum that I ever joined, was the force.net, and Club Jade back in the day. And I had joined like a bunch of other like fan forums after that. I became a really big anime fan soon after that. But Star Wars has been a constant in my life. I've gotten a lot of like professional opportunities. I forgot to mention in my intro, but I am the assistant producer of a little docuseries known as Looking for Leia, where we interview a series of amazing women, non-binary, marginalized people in the Star Wars fan base. Because at that time, we weren't the face of the fandom. And this was only like 10 years ago, I want to say, maybe a little less than that. With that in mind, like I think the surface level of the fandom has changed a lot. But this fandom has always been one where there have been a lot of like different people from different walks of life who just love this story. You know, when we were making we interviewed a zine maker from like the 1970s who was back there when they didn't know that there was going to be another Star Wars, so they started writing zines about what would happen to Han and Leia and Luke and all of the characters, and it was just so amazing to know that, like, especially with her, like, she was a queer woman in the 70s writing Star Wars fanfic, and that was like our foundation. And now here we are scouting AO3 for like our favorite ships and all of that, and it's wonderful now that the face of the fandom has changed so much, and that despite everything, like, we continue to be this like strong, I think, foundationally welcoming fandom that I think is just great and filled with so many people who have so many great ideas.
Yeah, I love that because that kind of aligns with the whole reason that we started this podcast as well, was to highlight women and femme and non-binary voices in the community. Because I, like you said, it, you know, we've always been here. It's just a matter of highlighting us more. And I think now, especially in the last few years, with Disney Plus and these Star Wars series, we're now pushing in hopefully a better direction or a good direction with more representation, both on screen, but also behind the camera too, with writers and directors and things that we have not seen as much in Star Wars, which is really exciting. So that's why I can't wait for the Acolyte. It's going to be so good.
I'm so excited for the Acolyte. Like I am at a point, I think I tweeted it earlier today, but like I'm at a point where I'm so excited about the Acolyte that I went and I was emailing someone on my professional work email today, and her name was Jackie, and it auto corrected to Jackie, and I had to like catch that before I sent it because I have been talking so much about that character and everyone in that show because I'm so excited. I can't wait. So hopefully future Katrina is also thrilled watching these new episodes.
Yeah, that's, it's so, is it, can, do you want to tell folks where they can we watch this documentary? Is it accessible?
Yeah, you can actually watch it for free. It had a run in 2018 on Sci-Fi, and then it was off the air. It didn't really have a home, and then we got our full broadcast rights back to it. So you can go to lookingforleia.com. It's a very short series, but a very cool and impactful series where you can learn about the contributions of women and non-binary folks throughout the history of Star Wars fandom and what it means to them. So yeah, definitely go check out lookingforleia.com to watch it for free.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that. I've been asking a lot of our guests that have kind of, you know, grew up as fans or in fandom and have transitioned either into content creation or working in the entertainment industry. And I wanted to know, since you do so many things, has your relationship with fandom changed since you've become, I guess, more professional in that setting than when you were growing up?
Yeah, I would definitely say that at least the way I present myself publicly has changed. I still look for fanfics on AO3 like I did on fanfiction.net growing up. I know exactly how many OB Ventures fanfics there are on that site. I think on the private end, on Discord with my friends, I always engage with fandom the same way I have growing up, where it's like, if there's something I love or something I have a big opinion on, I'll like hop over to them and talk to them about it. But I think that you also, as you navigate fandom, especially as a woman or a femme or a non-binary person or queer person or just a marginalized person in general, you kind of learn that you have to set some boundaries. And most certainly that holds true when you have like a professional presence in fandom. You know, you don't want to, like, I hate to say this, but you don't want to be all lackadaisical with your opinions. You want to make sure that what you're saying is something a little more well thought out. And also, you just don't want to welcome in like other people all the time. So I'll still like tweet my silly little jokes about Star Wars and stuff. And for the most part, like it goes off pretty well. But I think I'm a little more mindful, of course, about what I say and who I involve and the boundaries that I do set with myself and fandom publicly. But if you go look at my Discord channels, that's a radically different story. So yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, it's good to find your like safe spaces to express the thoughts that maybe should not always be outside thoughts or like public thoughts.
The general rule of thumb is always send it to the group chat first. That's your pulse check before you go put your thoughts out into the world. Always check with the group chat.
Definitely.
Advice we may not or may be heeding in a couple days when we do our shipping episode of Yap Sesh.
Yeah. Spicy. I love that.
That one will definitely, if you join our Patreon, you'll want to join because, you know, we'll have to go back and be like, maybe we'll take that out. We'll see.
Send the episode to the group chat first.
Yeah, honestly. So I think we can move on to our big topic. We talked a little bit about what Star Wars means to you and your like earlier memories in the Star Wars fandom. I also wanted to highlight that you are, in fact, I don't know if you've labeled yourself this, but I would like to label you as the CEO of Asajj Ventress.
I'll take it. I will. I try not to apply titles to myself, but I have been called that. I have been called the Ventress correspondent, the local historian of Asajj Ventress, and I will proudly hold that title. One of my biggest contributions personally that I am most proud of to Star Wars history is in Star Wars Brotherhood, there is a scene where Obi-Wan notices Asajj Ventress's lightsabers on her hips and then his eyes linger there. That's me. I helped with that.
Amazing.
Mike Chen hopped into my DMs and was like, I need to know the full construct of Asajj Ventress's costume, and you're the only person who would know exactly where her lightsabers sit. And I was like, oh yeah, they're right here. And then he was like, well, how would they sit if she were sitting down? And I was like, they'd be right here. And then I was like, Mike, what are you doing? And he filled me in a little bit, and I was like, yeah, if you care about me, you'll let Obi-Wan stare a little bit, just there. And so, yeah, so it may not be canon, but, you know, don't let your dreams become dreams when it comes to your favorite ship, kids, because
that's a great story. Wow.
I love that. And I shout out to Mike Chen. I love Brotherhood. That's probably one of my favorite of the newer Star Wars books that has come out, because it's got my Cal Kestis little mention. Yay! My draw to Paul. I literally cried reading that. And I love that he kind of low-key canonized the TARDIS as well.
Wait, that's right.
Because Hu Yang is voiced by David Tennant, there's a little line in Brotherhood that says something about like, yeah, Hu Yang's just been here for as long as we can remember. He just like showed up out of nowhere in a little blue box one day.
Oh, you know what? I think I do remember that.
It was cheeky, but I loved it. It was so good.
I mean Ventress is one of those characters who, you know, you latch on, especially in the Star Wars fandom. There is always a character that I think if you are a Star Wars fan who is fully committed to the fandom, there's at least one, if not like up to 20, that are just like, those are my guys. And Asajj Ventress is absolutely my guy. I think my most recent and exciting interaction with her is that I'm in the middle of a pretty grueling job hunt, and my partner was kind enough to get me a cameo from Nika Futterman, and Nika like starts it and she's like, my dear friend Katrina, and she like encourages me on my job hunt as Asajj Ventress, and it's just like, I've made it.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's been great.
Well, hopefully it brings you good luck.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Here we go. Thank you.
Good vibes in the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right. Cool.
So yeah, let's get into the meat of today's episode. Katrina, I would love for you to introduce today's topic, because when you brought it to me, I was so pleased. I don't know. There was just something like titillating about it. I was like, oh, okay. Yes, let's talk about that.
So
if you wouldn't mind.
Absolutely. From the start of Star Wars, when you listen to the line, a long time ago in the galaxy far, far away, world building is foundational to this saga. And I think that's what inspired me to talk about it today. You know, I'm very much into like D&D and tabletop RPGs. And of course, with my love of Star Wars and the like vast like mythos that is established throughout the saga, world building is so key to what we see and how expansive the stories are. So our main topic, of course, is world building in Star Wars.
Yes, I am also a big D&D tabletop fan, and I am a baby DM. Working on DMing for the first time. I just did like my session zero with my friends at home. Because when you want to play D&D and you're the only one that's played with your group of friends, you just end up being the DM. But I'm really excited. So I'm excited to have this conversation too, just to talk about like how you world build and a little bit about Star Wars is such a vast, like it's become so big from when it started, but it all started with a concept with the original Star Wars movie. Mm-hmm. And so there's so much inspiration, either real world or historical, that is brought into all of these things. And there's just so much. And it's kind of like, where do you start? And where do we want to start with talking about Star Wars world building in general?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that the place where we would probably want to start when it comes to world building in Star Wars is that main scroll. I think that it reminds me a lot, and of course this is George's way of nodding to like classic sagas and major movie franchises and stories where we are given a couple lines about exactly what's going on, the stakes are set out before us, and we are then taken from that large, vast story and pulled into just what's going on with Luke Skywalker and his buddies. And that's always been a core to Star Wars storytelling, is like, there is so much going on in the galaxy, but let's zero in on this rebel cell. Let's zero in on Cassian Andor. Let's zero in on this group of Jedi from 300 years ago, or thousands of years ago, or however, whatever you're playing or reading, there's always your focal characters who guide the story, and their actions and thoughts are always what echo out and affect the galaxy in some way or another. Not everyone, you know, takes a left turn and suddenly like blows up the Death Star, but Luke did. And, you know, that's I think what the magic is in Star Wars, is that these consequential choices that people are making in their everyday lives echo out on such a grand scale. And so I think that's the really magical part of the world building in Star Wars, is the human choice, the human emotion that matter so much to the rest of the galaxy.
I think what makes Star Wars so cool and so special is that it is kind of like you have a big map and you just mm-hmm. like click on a point in time or on that map and it drops you into these characters, and it just makes the world feel so lived in already, which I think is what also mm-hmm. makes it so immersive. Mm-hmm. In whether you're watching a movie or reading one of the novels or playing one of the games or you're going to Galaxy's Edge, like you kind of feel like you could be part of that story mm-hmm. yourself, and that makes everything else already a little bit more relatable in this mm-hmm. otherwise fantastical kind of universe that has magic and the Force and all of these crazy technology things.
I think that's the key to world building, is like you can take your story as far away from reality as possible, and it will still matter that what it's built on is the, how do I want to phrase this? Like the concept of human emotion, you know, like the things that matter to us every single day. When Star Wars was made, it was about the Vietnam War. It was a direct reaction to what that was. And from there, Star Wars has echoed out in almost every single story. It has been a reaction to things that we are dealing with every single day in our real world. It's far away. It's galaxy far, far away. It's a long time ago, but it's still exactly what it is here. And I think that's important to any story that you make, is that people can find a line from themselves to the character they're reading.
I want to ask about what, when we think of Star Wars, a lot of people automatically categorize it into being more sci-fi, when there's the debate on, is it more fantasy? Is it more sci-fi? Even though it is set in kind of a sci-fi setting, mm-hmm. narratively, I feel like, and a lot of the way that the rules of the world work are more of a fantasy setting. So I don't know, how important do you think that is to the world building, and what do you consider it to be more or less than?
Yeah, I think Star Wars sits in this really unique position because it is it is a space fantasy. It is, there are elements of science fiction to it. There are things that are like, you know, the Bacta tank, like we have this magical medicine that we developed that is nothing like medicine has ever been before, or, you know, lightsabers. We have these plasma blades that, you know, foundationally that element is something we can find in real life, but it's beyond anything that we've ever developed. But because of technology and science, it is there. But you're completely right in that it is at its core, it is a fantasy, it is a saga. I think it sits really closely to, you know, where it sits closer to where Lord of the Rings is than it does to where Star Trek is. It's nestled like very nicely in between those sorts of elements of storytelling. And I think that's what makes it so special and unique as a story, is that we get the cool ships, we get like the cool space battles and the lasers and the pew pews, but we also have this like the Jedi Order, these magical monks that can do incredible feats, and we have like these characters that are, you know, unlike any other thing we've seen before. These amazing aliens, even the humans in it have this like fantasy sense of who they are. And so yeah, I think that's the coolest thing about Star Wars, is it really was like nothing that had ever been done before. And I know there are a lot of lines from Star Wars to what Dune was, but even Dune had a different message. It had a different, there was a different like driving point behind Dune. So that's why it's really its own little element, you know?
Yeah, well, like Sawyer and I both come from science backgrounds. I have a mm-hmm. degree in environmental science, and Sawyer is in grad school for science stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Sawyer, if you want to speak to what draws you to Star Wars, because you've had an awesome series of videos on the biology of Star Wars and all of the different species and biodiversity and inspiration behind a lot of species and where they come from and those concepts. So if you want to speak on that, that will make me feel dumb. So please do.
No, I mean, that's really interesting, because that has been my claim to fame for so long. And it's something that I'm passionate about and would even hope to bring to, have done in some cases, to other fandoms as well. Just talking about real science through the lens of fiction. But I have historically not enjoyed a lot of fantasy stories and not been as invested in fantasy worlds as sci-fi worlds. I grew up in a pretty Star Trek household. My parents, that like when they were dating, they would watch the new episode of The Next Generation every week. You know, it was and Star Trek is very clear-cut science fiction, and it's also very easy to imagine almost any scenario in Star Trek as being a real conversation, a real problem or event that occurs in everyday life, because it's very much about human interaction. But yeah, that's interesting. I think that my opinion on this has shifted a lot over time, because when I started doing that, it was just kind of fact dropping, like, oh, well, this is what the science of the universe is saying about these creatures. And like, mm-hmm. now I'm more interested in how can we learn about real scientific concepts and theories through a fantastical setting. So I do love my silly little Star Wars critters, but almost everything about the species, the like, when we think of like the biology of a kangaroo versus the biology of a hut, like they're not similar at all. And it's mostly just someone sitting down with a piece of paper going, okay, what's the craziest thing that I can think about this giant slug creature? How can I make it even weirder? So that there's no real science to that, but I think it's an evolving conversation.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting conversation to have, like where these concepts come from, because, you know, everything is drawn from our real life inspiration and our real world experiences, especially now with the Star Wars canon growing and having us see more and more different species, more and more different planets, and how they've all become, you know, they all have their own climate, their own weather, their own, some of them have their own like political systems and economy and stuff. And it's so cool that like people just get to do that all day and like think about those kinds of things as their job. I would love that job. But like, it's so vast, and I just think about, you know, playing any of the Star Wars video games, even the older like KOTOR, how all the planets were so different, and how do you make something so different but then have there be some sort of like connective tissue between all of these things, because we, you know, in the Star Wars world, we have the, I'm just like rambling, we have these ships that can, you can travel from planet to planet, so obviously there's a lot of crossover, which happens in our real world too, just not on like a planet scale, on a different country or continent scale. But I don't know, it's such a fascinating concept to think about.
Well, I think something that I have kind of discerned from just talking about this, you know, it's not just the science, right? Like, I can sit here and I can talk to you about the science of Star Wars, and I could write you a convincing novel, but we also have a Star Wars history book coming out soon. I don't think it's out already. There's art history in Star Wars. There's architecture in the Star Wars universe. There are so many different, there are language, like all forms of knowledge that we have been imbued into Star Wars and adapted into this universe in a different way. And I think that something that makes Star Wars unique, and there are other fandoms, other stories, you know, certainly Marvel and like DC superhero universes are very collaborative and have allowed so many different types of people from all walks of life to add to the universe. But I think that Star Wars, because of the expanded universe and what that later translated to in canon with bringing in new authors, bringing in new artists, like, there are so many people that have laid a hand on the Star Wars universe and contributed to it with their own backgrounds and their own expertise. And because of that, we have this fully fleshed out world that almost feels like it's a parallel universe, because there's so much there.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
I agree. I love that, especially with the High Republic. Like, we, of course, we've had like incredible new authors in the new canon. I love the things that you know, Daniel Jose Older has added, for example. But with that, with the New Republic, we have been given this opportunity to like have these incredible writers from all walks of like storytelling and all different diverse backgrounds come in and really put themselves into the canon. And I think that's part of what makes the High Republic so interesting, is that there are storytelling elements there that we've never had before, that now, because it exists in the past of Star Wars, will echo out and affect the future of Star Wars. And I'm really excited to like see those and draw those lines, because that's like my favorite thing to do with Star Wars storytelling, is to like, you know, when they drop a line somewhere, I'm like, well, I'm gonna watch that one because that sounds really interesting. And then like 10 years later, it's just like, oh yeah, Jori Yossel was here thousands of years ago and they did this, and now because of that we have flying ships. Like, you know, that's the really cool thing about it. And I think that you know, Star Wars, even though it of course it's foundationally it's George Lucas, but if it weren't for Marshall Lucas, if it weren't for all of the storytellers that worked on the film, if it weren't for the sound department creating different sounds for ships and speeders and creatures, it wouldn't be nearly as immersive as it is right now. One person can only really do so much with their vast and expansive imagination. And I think that, like, that's, you know, one of the amazing, a lot of things make Star Wars special, as I've said, like, throughout this podcast so far, but, like, the collaborative aspect of it and the way that people are invited in to make this world even bigger is one of the most exciting and special things about it.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I've always been so fascinated with sound design especially in Star Wars, because how they come up with different sounds for mm-hmm. how they come up with sounds for like normal sounding things and what they choose to use to make those sounds is fascinating in the first place, like, and so creative, but also how they make sounds for things that like don't exist in our worlds. Like mm-hmm. You'll never forget the sound of a TIE fighter or the sound of a lightsaber lighting up or swinging or even going back down and like it, what's that called? Retracting, when you retract yeah. your light. Like all of those sounds are so unique and you'll never forget them. And like mm-hmm. someone one day was just like, yeah, I think I'm gonna take this sound of an elephant and this sound of cars driving over a wet road and and I forget what else it is, but we're just gonna put them all together and see what happens. And then boom, you have a TIE fighter sound. And like that is so, I think, integral to the world building, that you know, you have your visual concepts and your writing and your narrative and what everything looks like, but also it's like you have to think about all of the senses when someone is experiencing a story, and sound mm-hmm. is one of those. And I think that's, oh, it's so cool. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Can we get someone to make those videos where, you know, those videos of the sound design people like shaking bags of stuff and like yelling? Or, can we get some behind the scenes content of Star Wars?
I want more. I just, oh man, can they please, you said that and I immediately thought of like what, I haven't heard in depth what the lightsaber whip sounds like just yet. Oh. And I am so excited. And if I just get like a 5-minute video on like, here are the decisions we made for the light whip, I would be so happy. Cause I, growing up, and I'm sure, you know, everyone has like their prequel DVDs. There is a great short on like the sound design, and mm-hmm. it's what made me a Matt Wood fangirl, because they talk about specifically how they made the choices that eventually led to how each pod racer sounds, because each of them has a different sound because the engines are different and the speed is different and the way they move are different because they're all custom rigs built by these racers and their teams. And they go to like an airfield and they test the sound of different airplanes, different cars, different motorcycles, and they make choices about like, oh, this one's a little heavier, it's a little like more dense in its sound, so this is what's going to be Sebulba. And that's what his racer is going to sound like. And I'm, oh man, like, I hope, oh, please, like Sawyer and I have both asked for it now. So I'm putting it in the universe, like, please give us the sound design behind the light whip, because I feel like that thing is going to sound a lot different from your standard lightsaber.
I would just love to have seen the reaction of the Luminous team seeing the light whip for the first time.
Oh my god.
They so deserve every wonderful thing that is coming to them with this show. I'm so excited. It was so wonderful to see them all at the premiere.
It was great seeing them at that red carpet, because it's just like, look at this culmination of like something that started where, you know, with the only images we had were like a list of things, and like one of the things was like dinosaurs ? And now we're here at the Acolyte, and by the time this episode is out, it's out, and we'll have heard what the light whip sounds like. But I can't imagine like putting myself in their shoes, how much work they have put into this, and noticing that work on screen, noticing those mm-hmm. details or those choices that they made, those lines they dropped back when they started writing the High Republic that now matter in the Acolyte in new ways, like.
Oh, go ahead, Brooke.
No, I was just saying it's so good. I love, like, even just a year ago when Jedi Survivor came out, it was so surreal to see like someone in High Republic robes, like mm-hmm. on a screen. Like, I wasn't reading it in my book or seeing it in a comic, which like those foundation stories are so incredible, but there's just something that's hits different when you see your Star Wars like in a live action-esque setting. And like, we've been slowly moving towards that because we've got Jedi Adventures in the animation, and like, we're gonna have High Republic robes in person, like in real life. That's crazy to me.
I cannot wait to go to New York Comic Con and see the sheer, like, there's going to be an exponential increase, because it started with Celebration a couple years ago. There was a big High Republic cosplay meetup, but you know, more and more, first of all, we've gotten more stories and more characters to cosplay, but mm-hmm. I am certain there will be an exponential rise in High Republic robes at this year's New York Comic Con, and I am so excited for that, because who doesn't want gold Jedi robes? I mean,
one of my Star Trek fans who has never interacted with Star Wars before was like, maybe I want to cosplay a little from Star Wars, and I was like, let me show you something that will blow your mind. And I showed her the High Republic robes, and in 2 weeks she had High Republic robes, and she was out there cosplaying. She was a Mirrolin, and now she's like super into it. And I'm like, hey, like, this is another, yes, another little venue for me to like slide over and go like, here's some Star Wars I think you would like. And that's the other great thing about world building in Star Wars, is that there are so many entry points with this story, mm-hmm. where like you don't really need the overall story. We know it's in a galaxy far, far away. It's a long time ago. That's all we really need to know, that it's in space. There are spaceships. Now we're gonna go find out the lore. And you can drop someone in via Rebels. You can drop someone in via High Republic. You can drop them in via the comics, the games, and they'll still get this like incredible storytelling experience that will make them want more. And I sound like a dealer, but like this is the reality of how good the world building in Star Wars is that like if I have a friend who has a certain personality, then I know would be like, oh, this is my High Republic friend, or like this is the friend who would really like Resistance or anything. I can match Star Wars stories to what their likings are, and that just makes me so happy.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a good point, and I think it's changed so much in the last few years with all of this new content we've gotten, because I feel like the conversation used to be, okay, I'm going to show my friend Star Wars, or I'm going to show my kid Star Wars. Do I show them in release order or chronological order? And that was like the only discussion. That was like the only debate. And then we get the sequels, and the sequels, I think, controversial maybe to some, but I think that the sequels are a great entry point into Star Wars, especially for younger kids who may, you know, they're used to the MCU movies with these really high, like very fast paced movies with really great CGI and effects and that kind of humor and things. And I think the sequels offer a lot of that. That would be very appealing to a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are kids that would love the originals just as much too. So it really is now with, you know, The Mandalorian, I think, opened such a huge door for new Star Wars fans, because you have, you know, your random like boomer mom who has never seen Star Wars, does not care about anything about Star Wars, but loves that little green baby to like her whole heart. Mm-hmm. But that, to a lot of people, that is like a good gateway into all of whatever, what else is Star Wars about? So, and now we've got, you know, so much. So it's harder to answer that question when someone is like, okay, I want to get into Star Wars. Where do I start? It's like, well, what kind of things do you like? What kind of stories do you like? Because you probably want to start with things that are, you're more interested in, and then you can get into, you know, the whole universe if you're really into it.
It's just about like always finding out what someone really loves and knowing them well, and then placing them with the Star Wars that matters to them. If you have someone who's like, you know, men with the Roman Empire and World War II and things like that, you introduce them to Andor, you introduce them to Clone Wars. Like that's the most basic thing I could think of, but like that's their story. Those are the stories that are going to really like capture them and get them to latch on to this. And I think that is a testament to the foundation of Star Wars and what George really wanted it to be. And then what all of these different incredible storytellers have since made it.
Yeah, that's, I had a friend the other day text me and ask, hey, I want to get into the Star Wars animated shows. do you have any suggestions on where I should start? And I was like, oh, first, I love that you asked me. Thank you. And I love this question because, I mean, my answer is always start with Rebels, but that's just my bias. But I told him, you know, I think you, for me, what I thought about what he would like, I was like, I think you really enjoy Rebels. If you like Rebels, you can go back and watch Clone Wars because there's going to be characters that you recognize. And then if you like that, you can watch Bad Batch because that kind of is, you know, right chronologically after, after the Clone Wars. And, you know, you can, there's Resistance, there's Visions, which is not canon, but amazing, which I love that we've been able to expand even beyond canon with things like that and have other studios and other creatives like bring their own spin onto Star Wars. I just want to highlight that because it's so much fun.
Mm-hmm. I love that it's just you, it's, you know, the rules are gone, but the framework is still there. Mm-hmm. And that's the, I mean, like as fans, again, going back to fanfic, that's what we've been doing this whole time. It's just like, I like this, but I want to make it an AU where like they're in a coffee shop or like they're all in high school or like this is an AU where like so-and-so lives and like, how does that affect the whole galaxy? What does this person's presence do that makes it different from what it is?
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of the EU or Legends, obviously when Star Wars was bought out by Disney, or Lucasfilm was bought by Disney, we now have what is considered the canon and what is considered the Legends or extended universe or expanded universe. I think that's obviously a hot button topic to talk about in Star Wars, but I think it was probably the right choice because, especially now talking about all of this content that we have, having all of this other stuff that came before, while a lot of it's really, really great, it could potentially hold us back for the new canon and the new stories that they want to tell. But I'm not super familiar with Legend stuff, but I wanted to ask you both, what do you think works from like each, especially Legends, and then if there's Legends concepts that have not been brought into canon yet, what would you like to see, and what do you think would work best with, you know, what we've established as this new canon?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing about Legends is that because there were no restrictions. And that's not to say that's a bad thing. There are some really incredible stories that came from Legends. KOTOR, a lot of people love the original Jason and Jaina Solo stories. Most people, I think, love The Force Unleashed. That's the one game I actually have not played, so I can't speak on it. But, you know, there's these really great stories that came out of the Legends universe. And it allowed fans to experiment with the universe in the similar way that Visions has allowed a variety of art studios to add their touch to Star Wars with no restrictions. But the caveat to that is you, of course, get these, a lot of stories that are power fantasies, a lot of stories that are, you know, what is the absolute worst situation that we can put our favorite characters in, and how can we make them so unbeatable that they can get out of this seemingly disastrous situation. And while I think that has a place for sure, I think it's maybe not exactly what George Lucas originally intended for his universe. And I think that putting that, making that distinction, while also continuing to release non-canon content like Visions, which I think was a fantastic idea, and I think they should do more stories like that, I think it reinforces the central themes of Star Wars in a way that, you know, we can still go and play with the universe because we love these characters and we love these stories so much. There's still room for that in fan fiction, but also in Visions and whatever else. But you know, within the defined canon, there is at least a little bit of a limit to all the bad and all the good that can occur, just to reinforce the idea of the force and the balance and the light and the dark, all that yada yada yada. But that being said, as an Old Republic girly, and because the High Republic has done such a fantastic job of emphasizing the different ways that the force can work, the different ways that the force can affect the universe, the different cultures or cults that are involved with the concept of the force and how different people in the universe engage with it, I think there is room to bring in characters like Kreia into canon. Kreia is famously one of the best video game villains of all time, mm-hmm. not just in Star Wars, and her concept of killing the force, while I don't think it could actually be achieved in the way that she intended in canon, I still persist that she could be like a Kreia miniseries or something. And knowing that Leslie Headland was inspired by Kreia in mm-hmm. her concepts for the Acolyte gives me hope that they do intend to do something with that character, or at least that era of Sith Lords, because we also had Darth Sion, who was too angry to die, and I think there are there's definitely room for some of that to make its way into canon at some point. So that's my answer. I yapped a lot there, but
no, we're on Yapsesh. And I think to your point, like, we have seen those elements, like, not just Thrawn is here, which is great, but like, we have seen elements of those old Sith, like Darth Maul survived on anger and trash, mm-hmm. like. That in itself, I think, is a love letter. And I think a lot of what we're seeing with canon and what its comparisons are to the EU are always love letters to what that was, where it's just like, it doesn't work now, but I like that element, so I'm going to use it in this story, whether it be an outright character or something they did or an occurrence in the expanded universe. And like, when I was growing up, I wanted more Han and Leia all the time. Like, that was my whole thing. That's what, you know, my parents had me go to the library all the time, and I like read a lot of library books, but that's what drove me to the library like every week, so that I could check out a new expanded universe book. And that was like my entryway to how vast it was. And that eventually led me from like reading about Jaina and Jason to reading about Revan and Bastila and games. And like, I still play the Old Republic these days, both KOTOR and the MMO, because I love all of the new stories that are still being built into that universe, which I think is so fascinating, because it's not canon, but these storytellers and these game devs are being given this opportunity to like continue telling those stories, just like they do with Visions. And it's like, mm-hmm. this thing still matters to so many fans that we want you to continue expanding this universe, you know, in other words. But I think the element that I would like to see, of course, is a build on, and I'm going to sound like a 45-year-old man here, but a build on what Revan is in canon, because we have seen Revan in the sequels, in a mural, in a blink and you miss it moment, where the Sith legions are like, you know, at the Palpatine Eras tour, and like they're like worshiping him and stuff. There's a mural there which has like a bunch of expanded universe Sith lords, and Revan is like at the bottom, like, I need to get out of here, and I want to see what that was and what that legend was. And like, that I love that that choice was made, because it could easily just be a legend. Revan, she or he, could be just a fairy tale for the Sith that they tell to, you know, indict people into their cult. Or Revan could have been a real person. And like, I will say that growing up, like, Revan and Bastila were like, I forgot about Han and Leia for a while, because their story is so interesting, because it's about two people who are healing from these ideas that they were raised on, and they found out that this wasn't quite right. This isn't the right thing for me to be doing in this galaxy to make it a better place. And together they're able to find like bigger, better versions of themselves. And they also happen to fall in love. And nothing bad ever happened to them ever in the world. So
when I tell you, I Have never cried at fiction harder. Oh. And I knew the story. Like, I had spoiled myself already, and still reading that scene where he... Do you know Revan's story, Brooke? I don't want to ruin
it's this. It's fine. You can. It's fine. It's
on, yeah. The whole thing with Revan is that he, like, knows that the Sith Emperor is still out there, and he keeps having, like, Anakin-esque nightmares about him, but he doesn't remember what that was. He just knows that, like, there's something he has to go find. So he tells Bastila, he's like, I gotta go do this. And she's like, well, I can't come with you because I'm pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into the unknown regions to find and try to defeat the Sith Emperor. And he doesn't know what's going to happen. It does not end well for anybody. His supposedly best friend finds Bastila. And Bastila's like, he's been gone for years. You need to go find him. Mm-hmm. And she takes like a hollow tape of her and the, like, now 2-year-old son that they had. And then there's a scene right before they all go to fight the Sith Emperor where it's the last time he sees Bastila, and first and only time he sees his son. And then bad things happen. So
yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
as a Revan Bastila and Raylo Gurley, that was a tough read.
Yeah, it's tough. It's real. Like, that's always the thing. Like, I always hesitate to tell my Raylo friends, like, oh, you really like Revan and Bastila, because I'm like, oh, wait, you've already endured a lot.
But as we were saying, a lot of people have incorporated older ideas into new Star Wars, and
exactly.
I will die on the hill that Raylo was inspired by Revan and Bastila, because there are just too many similarities.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. Absolutely.
Like, I just think, even down to the way they look, like, yeah,
for real. I think I just had this thought as we were talking about KOTOR. I feel like there would be a cool place to, like, canonize Revan, but, like, a version of Revan where they have, like, this legends version that, like, the Sith tell to, like, their acolytes or their followers. And I would love to see, like, the story being told and then, like, flashback to the actual Revan and then, like, what actually happened. And I feel like there's a way that they could fit that story into canon and make it make sense, so it doesn't break any, you know, current canon laws or whatever you want to say. But I feel like that'd be really cool, and it would also kind of show how much of an unreliable narrator the Sith are. Overall,
I love the idea of, like, a young, like, aspiring Sith trying to track down the story of Revan and piece it together, and then discovering that, like, oh, Revan left because this is a horrible place to be. He didn't want to be this horrible person, and then he found and enlightened himself on what the Force really was, and it wasn't necessarily the Jedi or the Sith. It was a greater thing, and it always has been. And I think that would be a really cool way to bring Revan back in the canon, is discovering what the truth was. Because then you don't have to worry about time periods or details about, like, exactly what happened and mirroring KOTOR exactly. It's just this person uncovering secrets about Revan. That's what I would love to see. Like, I'm a huge Mara Jade fan, but if it were, you know, if it were Mara Jade or Revan and that storyline and presented in that way, I'd take Revan over it.
Are there any other things that we wanted to touch on that we haven't gotten to yet with Star Wars world building? Or anything that you have that you wanted to, that we haven't got to talk about?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you think about world building in Star Wars, the core of everything that moves Star Wars forward is so much deeper than, oh, Darth Vader did this, and you know, to put it blatantly, it's so much deeper than a man decided to do this. Everything big that happens in Star Wars, I want to say it right now, is done by someone who's not a man. Every course that is set, every major action, like it's always that, like, going, if you go, like, real deep into it, one of the things that I like to say is that Palpatine has all the power in the world until a teenage girl shows up.
Hell yeah.
It happens over and over and over again to him. Padme foils his plans. Leia throws him off. Rey messes everything up for him, and she's supposed to be his granddaughter. Like, if you, like, just take it to just the saga, the actions and choices of these women changes. They change everything. Everything they do is pivotal to what happens to the men and the other characters of Star Wars. And I think that that's my favorite thing about this fandom and this story is that certain people can deny up and down what Star Wars is and who it's for, but at the core of the story, and like George commented on this, he kind of missed the mark at Cannes this week, in my opinion, but he commented on this himself and said that like women constantly lead the story. They constantly make the choices. Mon Mothma, I just rewatched her declaration Rebels, and I was just like, like, ladies are the ones who make the change. People who are not men are constantly the ones who make the change in this world. And I think that that being the guiding light of what Star Wars storytelling is, people who aren't usually spotlighted in sci-fi, whether it's women or marginalized people, non-binary people, BIPOC, they're the ones who make the decisions and the actions that constantly matter. And I think that it's not something that like Star Wars really parades around or whatever, but from the get-go, from the beginning, from Leia leading a rebellion, from Marsha Lucas making the edits that made A New Hope good, Star Wars has been guided and the storytelling has been guided by the choices of these women and marginalized people. And I think that's what I love about it the most.
Yeah, even some of our antagonists in more recent yep. stories, it's been the girlies that have been, you know, foiling the plans. You've got Reva from Kenobi. Mm-hmm. You've got Trilla from mm-hmm. Fallen Order. My girl, I love her. Yeah, they really are like big driving forces of the story. Even all the way back in A New Hope, when you have Leia, a character who subverted, I think, a lot of normal expectations of she was not the damsel in distress. And I know that Carrie Fisher had a lot to do with her personality and mm-hmm. how that character was portrayed. And so I give her all of the love in the world for giving us such an amazing character like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that you're so right.
Yeah.
That's so true.
I think it's a real testament to Carrie's ability to tell stories that like she was advising on that when she was 17 years old, making those mm-hmm. those decisions about Leia. It's really funny because like I thought of Carrie today because you can't see it on camera, but my blush has glitter in it and I swallowed some of the glitter and I was like coughing and I was like, Carrie's with me. So yeah, I think that like her storytelling and the way that it you don't even realize how much influence she had over the original trilogy. And now we have storytellers like Leslie Headland, our most recent contributor to the Star Wars galaxy, guiding these stories in new ways that not only are offering new ideas, but are love letters to the things that came before. Like her, when she mentioned loving Asajj Ventress and the Night Sisters and her favorite arc was the Wrong Jedi, like I was just like, ah, I know I can trust this woman with my life. Like she knows what she's doing. She loves this, which is the core of it. It's like she loves Star Wars. She is one of us. And that is why I'm so excited about the Acolyte, because it's one of us making Star Wars, you know.
Yeah, I saw a video, I think, about recently talking about how when you walk onto, oh, it was a panel that Hayden Christensen and Rosario Dawson had done at a convention. Mm-hmm. And just like when they were filming Ahsoka, Rosario said just how like silent the whole entire set became when Hayden Christensen stepped on set, because all of the people that are working on these shows now have Star Wars tattoos. They grew up with Star Wars. Star Wars is like why they wanted to go into the industry and become filmmakers or set designers or costume designers. And it like is so that I feel like it's such a testament to the whole thing, you know, mm-hmm. the whole world building that we've mm-hmm. been talking about this whole time is just how special it is to so many people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Every year I say it's such a great time to be a Star Wars fan, and I hope that every year I get to say that, because it's, you know, it's all of us that grew up with it. It's the people who were there on day one watching these movies, like making these new things and putting in these new stories. And I think that from here, you know, with the right budget behind it, as long as it still keeps getting fueled, we're very lucky to like have a future where like we will always have Star Wars and we'll always have new Star Wars.
At the end of every episode, we do take a fan question, and today's is from our dear friend Chris, aka Star Wars Lawyer. Brooke, would you like to share what this question of the day is?
Yes, and I did not actually think about it beforehand, so this will be interesting. So Chris asks, if you are on trial for murder, pick three characters to defend you, and then we have to decide out of our choices, which one of us do you think would get off?
Katrina, you're our guest. Would you like to go first?
Yes, my three are Torben Buck, Buckets of Blood from the High Republic. I just feel like he's really good at reasoning. I feel like, you know, and he's also just like big and intimidating, but he's also the dude who would like, you know, cook you a rotisserie chicken at the end of the day. So Torben Buck, absolutely. I would see him defending me. Bail Organa, I feel like you can't go wrong there. So he's like my serious pick. And then the third character I would choose to defend me in court is Asajj Ventress, because she would just knock out everyone there and bust me out.
Love it. All right.
Brooke, do you have an answer?
Okay. My first thought was Hondo Ohnaka. I want him to defend me. I don't know how well that would go, but it would certainly be entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, who else? Oh, I want Geode. I want Geode to defend me, because that rock can do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like, maybe if we're gonna, I'm gonna stick with Star Wars. I'd love to see Darth Vader, just because he would just crush anyone. Or Tarkin. I feel like Tarkin would be a good defense on the defense team.
Mm-hmm.
Either one of those. I think those would be my.
Okay. Well, now I feel like I need to stick with Star Wars, because you guys did Star Wars. But like, my first thought was like Kingdom Hearts Goofy.
No, stick with that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? He could be in Star Wars at any moment at this point.
He could. I was like, well, at first I was like, Riku. Like, who from Kingdom Hearts? Probably Riku. But like, to be honest, if I want to get off and I want someone to deliver like a heartfelt speech to say why I'm innocent, it's gotta be Goofy.
Yeah. Goofy. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Who else? Oh yeah, I also, this is kind of an odd pick. I was gonna say Professor Layton, which is a little bit of a deep cut.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're familiar with Ace Attorney, you may be familiar with Professor Layton, because they had a crossover. Mm-hmm. But he's a British, like, old timey detective, and I think he would defend me with puzzles. Gosh, a third one. Joel Miller?
Okay.
Joel Miller's gonna do the same thing that Ventress would be doing.
Which version of Joel?
Wait,
Pedro or video game Joel?
Oh no, video game Joel. I'm sorry, yeah. Pedro. But yeah, I think he would make sure that if I was found guilty, it wouldn't matter.
He'd pop your kneecap off.
Yep, yeah. Those are my answers. I feel like I should have done Star Wars, but yeah.
No, I like the curveball. I like it.
Team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is our show, friends.
Yeah. Katrina, thank you so much for joining us. This was super fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Before we go, I would love if you would share where the people can find you, and if you have anything cool that you're working on that you'd like to share and tell us about.
Yeah. So everyone can find me anywhere on the internet at Ocatrina, O-H-C-A-T-R-I-N-A. Again, check out Looking for Leia. That's at lookingforleia.com. You can watch the full series for free. It is timeless and I love it. My podcasts are What's Glup on the Geeky Waffle Network, In the Cantina, which I host on Twitch. You can also find my game streams on Twitch on the weekly. And then also check out Pedro Pascal, the podcast about Pedro Pascal, which I co-host with my dear friend Rachel Leishman. I am currently writing my first novel, so that is in production. It's called Generational. It is basically everything that I've learned about world building from Star Wars and Blade Runner, and I just kind of mashed it all together, and it's about generational trauma. So that is in progress and hopefully will come out in the future. But you can also check out my two Ventress fanfics, which I'm very proud of. One of them is called Howl of the Banshee, and the other is called Ventress Golden. And you can find those on my link tree, which is also Ocatrina.
Thank you so much. This was such a wonderful conversation. So happy to have you on. And everybody who is listening or watching, thank you so much. We truly appreciate your support. And yeah, we'll yap with you guys later.
Bye.